Okay, continue on, Mr. Lobby.
Well, I noticed here you got Elwood Lumber Company at Buxton. That lumber company came fairly late. It kind of bugs me because I can remember a sawmill at Buxton that apparently never existed. I have talked to people that have lived in the area all their lives, and there never was a sawmill where I thought there was. In my mind, I've confused the Buxton area with someplace else. But Elwood came in there from an operation down out of Birkenfeld in Columbia County, where it was Elwood and Snow down there. And he came up and he set up a mill at Buxton, and he was in the woods, and they had a railroad that branched off the SP&S line to Vernonia. And the branch, there's a road going east, right, from a highway junction up through Buxton and on up the hill. And their junction was right where that crosses the where the old SP&S grade was. Mm-hmm. It's now, I think, a state park, that whole right-of-way. But they were back in there about 4 miles back up the canyon. And they operated for 6 months. Then we have this GHP Lumber Company at Hillsboro, which you've already mentioned. And I believe that was also part of this Hillsboro Lumber Company. I think they were all the same operation. Of course, J.C. Hare was involved there, too. All right, now over here we have the Interstate Logging Company. Now what they were, that was the old Koster Products Company, and Koster Products was made up, it was primarily a cooperage company. Now cooperage means that they logged and made barrels. And they had the Western Cooperage and they had the California Barrel Company, which both operated down in the Olney area in Clatsop County, but they were primarily a redwood operation near Eureka. And then Koster was the head of it. Then when they finished up down around Olney, they moved up on the Vernonia branch of SP&S about the county line. I'm not sure just which side of the line they were on, but they logged into the Washington County from there. And they set that up as Koster Products and operated there for quite a while. Then when after the Tillamook burn, when they opened up that area and Consolidated Timber Company was formed, they moved in there and operated up there as an Interstate Logging Company. Mm-hmm. And later on they moved over to timber. I think that was just a truck operation.
There really was a lot of movement, changing of sites of the individual companies.
They moved around, and very often they changed name at the same time they changed sites, you see. For what reason, I don't know. But
just to confuse historians, maybe.
Well, they certainly did that. That's for certain. Yeah, we covered Laurel Lumber Company and Lovegren Lumber Company. I think this Laurel has some connection with the Hillsboro Lumber Company too, if I'm not mistaken. But I'd have to check to be certain of that. McCall at Timber. We've got, that's D.H. McCall, and I think Miller Cox followed McCall. It's the same operation. D.H. McCall moved from there over into Clark County in Washington, and I think this Miller is the Miller that's connected with the Eastside Mill and Lumber Company, and that's where Tony Losman came mm-hmm. in.
That's right.
And those are both the same operation.
Excuse me for a moment.
Yeah.
There was so many mills and so many mill and camp owners. I'm curious, was there any type of association where the company owners would get together and discuss common problems or?
Well, yes, they did that originally. They formed some associations for setting prices. Of course, later on that. That was frowned on. But originally,
they would set prices?
Yeah, they would establish the price they were going to pay for logs. when the loggers were in a position to gouge them for logs, you see, that way they wouldn't they would pay just so much or they wouldn't operate. And they also conspired, if that's the word, to set prices for their product. They certainly got together and set limits on production so they wouldn't flood the market.
Was this illegal at the time, or was there really any restriction?
No, it was perfectly legal, but I think that probably that type of activity is what is responsible for the laws now that limit that sort of thing.
So when did the laws come in to...
I couldn't tell you exactly, but I know up until World War I period, say, that they used to do that. And the main outgrowth, I guess, of that would be the West Coast Lumbermen's Association, which set standards for the product, but it doesn't set prices or anything like that. The West Coast Lumbermen provide the graders and the various grade stamps and that sort of thing. And then, of course, the Columbia River loggers got together and set the standards for scaling logs and so on. But originally, yeah, they did get together to control the market.
Maybe that was part of the reason for the rise of the labor activity among the loggers themselves.
I don't know that it had any influence on the union activities. The lumber companies managed to control union activity pretty well up until the government came along during the First World War and set up the Spruce Division. And then they set up the 4Ls, which was the Loyal Legion of Loggers and Lumbermen. And that was kind of a union activity, but it was set up by the government.
Was there much of that, those two organizations in this area then?
Yeah, the 4L developed quite a bit. They had their own publication, and if I'm not mistaken, I think Stuart Holbrook edited that. But they established camp conditions and that sort of thing. They were responsible for putting libraries in camps and for they arranged entertainment, something like the USO for the troops during the Second World War. And their influence remained after the war was over.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a rather benign organization. It was sponsored by the government, and I think the operators took part in it to a large extent. Perhaps they may have influenced a little too much, but there wasn't much union turmoil, other than the IWWs that came along out after the war. They were a left-wing Marxist organization and rather radical, but they came along to unionize the Woods operations. But they didn't get a very good foothold because the loggers tended to operate on a piecework basis, by the thousand feet. And of course some of the higher skills didn't, like the climbers and the loggers, hook tenders and riggers and that sort of thing. They had a rather well-established price scale. They were always in demand, so they didn't need to organize. They could command whatever price they wanted.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah. But the fellows that worked in the woods and the lower grade of workers worked by the thousand feet, and they didn't want union control over their activities. They didn't want to be limited in what they could do. They'd work from daylight to dark, and the more they worked, the more they made. And they didn't want to pay anybody dues for the privilege. So the unions were rather late in coming to the woods, I'd say.
It's interesting.
Well, let's go down this list a little further. We've got Maori Logging Company there at Glenwood. They logged north of the highway area. I think that, if I'm not mistaken, they logged along the timber highway back in that area. Here you have Multnomah Lumber and Box Company at Reliance. That's just Doughty again. Fred Doughty was the head of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, it sounds like you knew several of these people personally. What was your contact with these?
I bought timber from Fred Doughty. He was a timber broker when I knew him. He's rather elderly, and he had an office in a building right across Stark Street from J.K. Gill's. There was a real estate office there, and up on the balcony he had his desk and office. Mm-hmm. As a separate thing. It was on the balcony. But at that time, he really didn't know much about what he was selling, really, because he sent me out to look at timberland, which didn't exist. People would come and list it and perhaps give the wrong locations, you know. Section and township and range and so on.
So you would come in contact with these people purely on a business.
Yeah, right.
In search of better or timberland.
That's right. Here at Gales Creek, Fred Maneri Davis logged. Now, that was Roland Maneri. I didn't know Roland very well, but I knew his brother Gordon, who still lives in Portland on Cornell Road there. But Gordon and their father, James Maneri, was quite an extensive logger. He got started out of Troutdale. He drove logs down the Sandy River to Troutdale. But he took over the logging in Lincoln County for C.D. Johnson Mill at Toledo, the big one.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids were working there with him. Now, Roland was not really a logger. He was more of the intellectual type. But he and this Davis, Charlie Davis, who was also out of a logging family, they set up together out there, and they didn't make it. They were out around Gales Creek area. I've never been able to find out exactly where their operation was. It didn't last very long. He is still living in California, but after he left there, he got into some other line of business.
So did some of the mills and camps that were set up, they just failed immediately?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's a very competitive business, and it took either a lot of experience or a lot of intelligence to get in there and make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
You had a large overlay, you had a large overhead, you had a large outlay to get in, and you had to be sure that there was enough timber coming out to cover the cost of getting into it, and that took a knowledge of the timber. You had to have some idea of the quality and what market price you'd get for it and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to do a lot of figuring before you started.
Were there many mills operating without the rail lines, the spur lines, or mills and camps?
Yeah, there were a lot of them. The Carnation Lumber Company is an old timer there in Hillsboro, and they never had a camp. They just bought on the market.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they ever had a logging operation, but they've been there for a long time. And that's just one example. But the Hillsboro Lumber Company did have a logging operation, but they also bought from loggers all through that area.
Mm-hmm.
That was the common way of doing it. For the most part, you see, if you were relied on the market entirely for logs, you couldn't plan ahead too well, because you didn't know what the market would be, what the price would be, or what the availability of logs would be. But if you were buying that way and you had a little tract of your own, you always had that to fall back on. You could log your own timber when it wasn't, you either couldn't get logs or you couldn't afford them. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them work both ways. Let's see. A lot of these were rather small. It's North Pacific Fir Lumber Company. As I said, that was Eccles at Banks. Oregon, Kansas Timber Company. I confused with Kansas, Oregon. KO. I've got them here at Timber, and I don't know what their operation was at Timber, but there was one down here at Rockton on the east edge of the county, just below the Cornelius Pass, where that's the west end of the tunnel on the railroad. That was Vaness from Winlock, Washington. And I think that's Oregon, Kansas, if I'm not mistaken. And I think we show it under another name here. Let's see, that should be Rockton Lumber Company. Have we got that? Yeah, we got Rockton Lumber Company there, yes. That was the same same operation.
Were there any camps or companies in the Sherwood area toward the southeastern part of the county?
The only one that I've come across shown at Middleton, which Middleton, it was the next station west of Sherwood, and it's about where the rail line crosses the highway, Newburgh Highway. There was just a store there, and there was a logging company down at Middleton that had a railroad, which was rather unusual in that it operated on a cable, and they built their own locomotive, and it would pull itself up the hill on the cable and pull a loaded car behind it. And it was called a Potter Clamor locomotive. Now this Potter designed it. He had logged originally over around Bonnie Slope area, and he'd used a counterbalance affair there. We had cars that ran on wooden rails, and the loaded car would pull the empty car up, and he had a winch fastened to it so he could control it. But then that worked pretty well with the power unit stationary, but then he got the idea of making the power unit mobile, and he mounted it on these trucks, and he set it up over there, and he had about a half mile of track, and he hauled up out of the canyon, which I suppose would be between Middleton and Parrot Mountain there. And
sounds like quite an elaborate operation.
Well, yeah, it was a demonstration operation as much as anything. He tried to sell that locomotive to others, but he never was successful. And we had this. I noticed a Middleton operation here under another title, which, yeah, Chandler Brothers at Middleton. That may be the operation. I couldn't be sure without looking it up. But that was also just a small operation. I suppose these small mills would cut around 35,000 feet a day, which is not a very large mill. We used to cut that in a little diesel mill with five men, so you can see it isn't too large. And 35,000 feet of logs would be, I suppose, six or seven loads of logs, truckloads of logs a day.
So what was a good size daily production for an average
mill? Well, the bigger mills of the railroads usually ran from 100,000 to 250,000 a day, although a lot of the 50 to 100,000 mills also had railroads, but one locomotive and two or three cars would satisfy them, you see. Now, Prouty Timber Company operated between what you might call West Timber and Cochrane. And Prouty's had a big mill at Warrenton on the coast. And they got up there, and they logged in the timber area and just sold the logs. I don't know why, but down on the coast, they just logged their own mill.
Mm-hmm.
So they had the two separate operations. And they had a pretty junky outfit. The equipment, the Prouty's, that was operating up there looked like it had been abandoned for years.
That seems to be quite common.
Yeah, they were down at the bottom of the list when it came to maintenance of equipment.
Well, Mr. Labby, I think we spent quite a bit of time here.
Yeah.
And maybe we could have another recording session sometime
sure
in the future.
Sure can, anytime you want.
Okay, I think, I think we've crammed a lot of information in just an hour or two of tape, and I'm really happy with what
yeah,
we produced.
There's lots more where that came from.
Well, thank you very much.
You're entirely welcome.
Taken together, the John Labby interview provides a good overall background into the logging and lumbering industry here in Washington County.